things that I am interesting myself in right now is
farms as a whole.
Yeah, you can see this is a little bit soft. To that point there. Mm-hmm. There's been some softening of the varnish. I'm not real sure what that would be due to, but he achieves a lot of depth in his varnish, and that's one thing you want to look at for a good varnish depth, almost as if there's a dimension in the wood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sign of a good varnish depth, as well as color.
Mm-hmm. He mixes his own varnish, did I
Yes, he does. He does. And you learn varnish mixing as part of the schooling here. Varnish will be mixed for a number of students at once, and then everyone uses that varnish.
Mm-hmm.
If a student wants to mix their own with their own materials, they're given free rein to experiment. It's almost a whole science in itself. I think any maker would tell you.
What is it about, you know, about Mr. Lee's varnish that makes it his own?
The color, and the way in which he applies it. I'd say color is the first thing you notice about certain makers. You know, and some makers go through stages where they change the color. I right now don't know if this is typical of his color or not. This is more of a brown gold than a reddish varnish. So you can see, just in looking here, the difference. This one is much more red. Color's achieved in a lot of different ways. Anilines, which... there. Watercolor, and you do this, it's almost like a very fancy French polish. I know students have put on as many as 20 coats, and each coat is applied, rubbed, sanded before the next one's put on. And depending on how it progresses, you add different colors, and you're not putting on the same duplicate coat that many times. You're changing, which is what gives you the depth. The matter in which you apply it and the order in which you apply it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you listen for is the
Talk
ring.
A little louder.
Oh, one of the things you listen for, the ring of the strings. On viola, the upper string has a tendency to be a little bit dead. It doesn't ring once you draw the bow across it. And that's a matter of it's a large body and it's a thin string. The C string, the lowest string, often gives you a nice vibrant sound, and that's because it's I don't know, much more suited for the size of the instrument. Viola is sort of an in-between and a difficult instrument to make a nice even sound out of. So you can play an instrument and hear maybe the bottom notes have a nice ringing sound, and the upper notes might sound a little nasal.
You play them and so we can see what you mean.
There's your bottom. Compared to. So you can hear a lot more ringing after that bottom string. And that is probably the one part of the viola that's most difficult. You don't have that much difference, that kind of difference on the violin, only because the size of the body is smaller and the string size is much more uniform. Let's see.
Putting it together, what can you do if you don't get the right sound out of it right now? Say the violin's all finished and you're finally ready to play it and test how it is and it's not right.
Okay, at this point, once the varnish is on, there's not anything that you can do to the body itself. That's finished. Inside, underneath the bridge, is a soundpost, which is a dowel-like piece of wood that... can be moved higher or up or down on the instrument, in or out towards the center or away from the center. That has a large effect on the sound. The bridge itself, we get bridge blanks, we call them, and then we cut them down. So the shape of it, the width, how large the designs are. It's not just ornamental, there is functional purpose.
There's various holes cut into the bridge itself.
Right, and those can be adjusted and changed. And some things with the fingerboard, which is the what the player plays, presses their fingers on, there's small adjustments that can be made there. If it's too low, your strings are too high off of it, it's going to affect the sound. If they're too low, they won't have a chance to vibrate enough, so that you can adjust. You can try different strings. Check for possible gaps. I mean, it's possible that there's an opening that will affect the sound of an instrument.
Very subtle differences, and if I or anyone else who may be familiar with the violin and like it just picks one up, they wouldn't even hear these things.
Only that the large differences, that would be like the ringing of the instrument, or if there was a buzz. Mm-hmm. They have a thing called a wolf tone, which is more common on the cello, which is a sound that instead of getting a musical sound, you just sort of get what they call sort of like a woof. There's just so much vibration, it hits at a certain point in the string where it doesn't produce a sound. And I don't know if it's woof or wolf. Woof tones are very difficult because you're not sure exactly what's causing it. Is it the shape, the string? You don't get as many of those on the violin because of it's something about the vibration.
So is it typical that once a student finishes their instrument, hands it to the instructor and says, here it is, it's done, that it's not really done at all, that there are a lot of fine tunings to be done?
Oh, yes, And I think anybody who's varnished it and puts it to their neck the first time, it's a real thrill. I think they know that they're just getting a rough idea, and then they have all the fine adjustments left to do. And professional players constantly have their instruments adjusted. So it's not something that once you finish it, you never touch again. So
is that frustrating, or is that part of the artistic process? Or?
Yeah, it's just it's like cutting reeds for reed instruments. You're never finished. And some makers, again, a violinist who plays professionally and plays constantly is so attuned to their instrument that one small change they detect and they want it taken care of. Whereas a much more of an amateur may not notice or care about the changes that he hears. My own instrument has been sounding really raucous, real brilliant and bright, a not pleasant sound. And I looked at it the other day, and I have an opening, because of the dry, cold weather.
That's where parts of the body separated.
Right. It needs to be re-glued. And that's going to make a big difference because you've got air and sound. You've got less vibrating surface, and you can get some really horrible. You can get a big difference when it's glued. Anyway.
So that it's not frustrating to you to have to keep going back to the same instrument. Does it become a...
it depends. sometimes, yes, because a lot of times you fix one thing and something else happens. Mary had the same thing happen. She was getting a real nasal sound on one string, so she adjusted the sound post, and then she got a buzz. And then trying to get rid of the buzz, the sound wasn't as pleasing. And it sort of just goes back and forth. And the instrument will change the more it's played or the less it's played. I don't know how much of that is really scientifically based and how much is superstition, but an instrument that's played is going to adjust to itself much more. It's going to be vibrating more. It'll settle itself in. If it's not been played, then all these little aspects never quite get cleaned up, and you have to start over again each time you pick it up.
Can you play something?
Say you had our fingers in the wrong place.
How did you do this?
I don't want the world to know that. I'm doing a test for the purfling to see how wide it'll be. So I was knifing. I had my thumb right here and went right into it like that.
Just kept going. Is that pretty common? Little accidents?
Little accidents. People cut themselves frequently, but it's things like this that are real dumb that you don't want to tell anybody what you did because... your hand was in the wrong place.
Maybe that puts a little something extra of you into the instrument.
Yeah.
Did you have any stitches?
No, I thought I was going to have to, but...
Okay, but now you can't play, of course.
Well, it's not going to affect it because it doesn't... If it was on this hand, no, I wouldn't be able to play.
Well, someone goes on downstairs. Yeah. It's only one of your strings is...
This is not something I made yourself. Instruments by now, though, right?
Three complete that are in the last stages of varnishing, and then I'll set them up.
So you haven't been able to play any of them yet?
It's just frustrating.
You look forward to that time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been a long time just to see what they sound like. Each one will be different, I'm sure.
Do you plan to, you'll be able to keep one of them?
Yeah, I get to keep the first one that I made, and then the school keeps the other ones.
What's that like to finish them, first of all, to be able to play your own instrument?
I don't know, because they're not done yet. No, but I like it, yeah. I think it'll be good.
How long have you been playing?
I've been playing violin around probably 12, 13 years.
Mm-hmm. And the second half of that question is to be able to sell an instrument that you made and to see a value put on it like that. You're looking forward to that, aren't you?
Oh, definitely, and just to get other people to play them and to get their opinion, because each person likes a different kind of sound, different kind of feel, and then just to know what they think of the instrument and then try and... you can build them all different ways that sound different, high end, louder, low end, louder. Different people like different sounds, so that'll be interesting to see how they like it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and your name?
Peter Seaman.
And are you from Chicago?
No, I'm from New York originally. I moved here to go to school.
To this one?
Right.
Okay. What store are you in?
I'm in, good question,
fifth. Almost done.
Fourth?
Wait till I warm up a little bit.
How long have you been playing?
Since before you were born.
Okay.
I started when I was about 9 years old, I guess.
Thank you.
with my fiddle.
Yet to finish your first one, right?
Yes.
You just began. You must look forward to the time when you can play something like that on the instrument you made yourself.
I'd like to.
You think
how
you
long is that? Was it 3 years?
Oh, maybe a year and a half.
The rate I'm going, it'll be 3 years.
That'll make a difference to you, won't it, as opposed to just playing something someone else made?
Well, it depends on how it sounds. When I get through it, it depends on how it sounds.
Uh-huh.
I enjoy playing, and if it sounds good, fine. If it doesn't, maybe I'll try to doctor it up. If it doesn't work, then I don't know what I'll do with it.
Go back to the one someone else made.
Yeah. Well, I have a pretty good fiddle that I like quite well. But if it's good, I might sell my good fiddle and keep the other one. I don't know.
Okay. Great instruments that you made.
I did. It's terrible.
How do you flunk that part of it and still make it through school?
Well, it's a percentage of my final grade. But I did flunk that.
So, that must make it harder for you to know when you've finished an instrument or when you've got it tuned just right?
I can tune an instrument. I can do that. But actually, for an evaluation, for anyone to evaluate it, they have to be able to play the instrument proficiently, and I just was not able to get that kind of training or background in it at all. I mean, there's usually, when people talk about differences in instruments, usually they're very subtle differences. They're not these broad things.
Uh-huh.
So it takes a finer player, somebody proficient on the instrument, to really feel that. Then again, sound is very subjective, too.
What you like in an instrument, I may dislike. And that's usually what we're sort of up against when we sell an instrument. You understand?
Uh-huh.
And some makers, when they make an instrument, they prefer a certain sound. And that may not be quite in tune with what the public likes. So
how did you get involved with making them?
Actually, I have a master's degree in industrial education, and I was going to become a shop teacher in primarily woodworking. I have a strong woodworking background, and I did do a lot of studying in college about what's called luthery. It's a vocation of building musical instruments, string musical instruments. I built different types of instruments. I started with a simple traditional American one, a dulcimer. I don't know if you've heard of one. Uh-huh. Started building that and completed it and had a lot of fun doing it. Then I got into period instruments. I built a few lutes, classic guitars. I went to a school in Red Wing, Minnesota that has a program, a 10-month program after college, which was designed just to give you an idea of how much you had to learn before you got into this. And
be in woodwork or
something. Yeah, that's exactly it. In fact, a lot of the students come here with no knowledge of woodworking. They practically don't know which end of a knife to hold. You know, it's most of them have a strong background in music. So,
are they really hard to teach in that case?
No, no. In fact, many of the students that have never had any woodworking background do quite well because we train people with the understanding that they know absolutely nothing when they come here about woodworking. And from there, we build a nice foundation. When they get all their technical skills, how to sharpen tools, how to hold the tools, how to use them, then they take off.
And they know what a violin should sound like. They know the finer points of how it is when it's done, right?
Because that's right. They have a good feel for it. You know, they can make those kind of small adjustments to bring out the finer points. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
To do when you finish school?
I haven't decided yet. I'll either get a shop, probably get a job in a shop somewhere if I can.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what other graduates end up going and doing? What are some
most graduates get jobs in shops all over the country, world. Peter's going to work in Germany over there when he gets out. People work all California, East Coast, West Coast, all over.
Mm-hmm. And then do you continue to make instruments for your own sales?
Yeah, mostly on the side. Do learn repairs at the shops, work on older instruments, and then build on the side and try and sell your instruments.
How long does it take you? Can you estimate to make a violin?
Well, it depends on how. It takes different people different lengths of time. It takes me a long time. Whereas Mr. Lee could make one in real real quick. I think what Brian usually says about 100 hours, I think, 100 working hours, yeah. Rough estimate, yeah.
So it's not something that, if you say it sells for $1,000, that seems like a lot of money, but it's not necessarily a way to make a living.
Right, right. You have to really build your reputation and get and be able to charge a lot of money for your instruments.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what Mr. Lee charges for his, for instance?
I don't know. I don't know what they go for.
I just strung up my first three violins at the end of last semester.
And what was that like?
It was nice. I came to school as a more of a musician than a woodworker. I'd never done any woodworking before, so it was nice to string them up and have them be instruments rather than
wood constructions. So I liked that, and the setup went okay for me. So I felt comfortable doing that, and it was real nice.
You must be really nervous as you first put it up and get ready to actually play.
Yeah. When you tighten the strings for the first time. Certain parts of it are kind of adjusting, and you hear all these cracks and creaks, and it's real frightening. But it's nice.
You worry they'll just fall apart? Is that possible?
I think everybody worries about that with their first one, that the neck is going to snap off, or when you put all the pressure on, it's just going to, you know, come apart. But I don't know of anyone that's happened to. So, but it, you know, it's a fear, sure.
Yeah. So you're happy with the sound of yours?
Yeah, in general. There's a lot to learn about setting up an instrument, adjusting the sound pulse, cutting the bridge, stuff like that. But yeah, I think I am. They sound decent enough to me. Not great, but, you know, they sound fine.
So how long have you been playing?
Well, I started the violin when I was 6, and then I switched to the cello when I was 10, and played through college and after college. I didn't play so much, but for a good part of my life.
So what's the difference between playing an instrument you made? That must just add another dimension.
It's nice. We keep our first and our last, so I have my first violin at home. And it's just kind of nice. I see it sitting there, and I just pick it up and play it, and it's, I don't know, it's just kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
2 years after I got out of college, and I guess I was trying to decide what I wanted to do with my life. And I had thought about violin making when I was back in college. And I guess I decided if I wanted to kind of move ahead in jobs, I'd probably have to go back to school and get a master's degree in something. And I really didn't want to go back to an academic school. And I thought it would be nice to have a skill, you know, a concrete skill. And this had always intrigued me, and I just took a chance and came here.
Okay. So as a woodworker, how do you rate instrument making? Is this a higher level of the art than bookshelves?
Oh, yeah. It's. I guess the tolerances are a lot smaller, and it's generally regarded as one of the finest forms of woodworking. Just technically speaking, I guess artistically, it's limited in some respects because where you can change what changes an individual, there's some creativity, but it's very subtle, and to the untrained eye, you probably can't even notice it.
Mm-hmm.
So in large measure, we make for other makers, which I suppose is true of many occupations.
Mm-hmm.
Unless or not, they can tell.
What do you mean? They know by the sound, but...
They know by the sound, but they can't tell whether it's, well put together or not. Some musicians will buy an instrument because it's older, and it might look... It looks old, and it has personality and character, and it may sound good, but it doesn't, you know, the insides could be just rotting away. It could be falling apart or badly put together to start with.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Named the candy after his wife.
Oh.
We used to be Eda's, and then we changed the Eda candy logo. It is kind of a pun.
Okay. And that has it become a more adult-oriented industry? I mean, the yuppies seem to be more
in tune with candy and these, even these cookie stores, that kind of thing?
Yes. One of the interesting developments in the confectionery industry is a growing market and interest in candy among young adults, the so-called baby boomers, who have the disposable income to spend on confectionery and enjoy it. Many manufacturers have come out with new products, gourmet line candy products with maybe a high quality chocolate or otherwise, and it is a growing market and a very exciting one that's helped drive consumption up.
So might there have been a lull with the kind of health food kick of the 70s? Are you coming back from that?
Yes, I think so.